Issues, Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, is author of our Book of the Month for November, Five Things You Can Do to Live a Jesus-Centered Life. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Five Things You Can Do to Live a Jesus-Centered Life by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for November, Five Things You Can Do to Live a Jesus-Centered Life.
No matter what we choose to believe, there's no God who condones taking the life of an innocent human being.
Where I think we are in the culture, but also with religious institutions, is that people have stopped hating us, that is to say LGBT people, but they're not yet ready to celebrate us. That's the next big work to do.
Maybe it's something as simple as you whistle while you work.
Just whistle while you work.
Mega churches are a house of cards. Mega churches really are the primary example of what's wrong with evangelicalism, why it's so thin, so insubstantial, so unsatisfying.
Southern Illinois truck drivers, love issues, etc.
If you go back to the 6th century, the place to be was, of course, the Roman Empire. It is fracturing. It is, well, its political fortunes and its fortunes in general are on the decline. That doesn't mean it went down all at once. It kind of sputtered to an end over several centuries, but some greatness still emerged, not only in terms of the politics, but in terms of the churchmanship, even in the 6th century decline of the Roman Empire. One of those, he even actually bears that title, the great Justinian, emperor in the 6th century, is being remembered by the church on November the 14th. We're going to do so on this Tuesday afternoon, November the 12th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome back to Issues, Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. James Buescher will join us for the first few minutes of the program. A little bit later, audio open lines. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court case on prayer before government meetings. There ought to be some limits, say a lawsuit that the Supreme Court is going to hear. Of course, it's common now in state houses, in our federal government, for everything to open with prayer. Sometimes it's a non-sectarian kind of prayer. Sometimes it is. What are your thoughts on that? What's your reaction? What are your questions and comments? That's open lines in about 20 minutes here on Issues, Etc. The Supreme Court case on prayer before government meetings. Our call-in number 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or you can leave your question, your comment, or your reaction to the story on the Supreme Court's hearing a case on the limits of public prayer at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. James Buescher is a regular guest. He's assistant professor of historical theology and director of the Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Buescher, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Todd.
A few get this epithet, the great, alongside their name in church history. Just a few. In the case of Justinian, what does that mean?
Yeah, well, it's I guess I don't know off the top of my head technically what it might entail, but I do think Justinian kind of is in a way worthy of the title because of just how much he does kind of accomplish. He is kind of called the emperor that never sleeps. In fact, I think that's one of the ways he's referred to, and he is very significant in almost every facet of society. He's, as you mentioned, certainly emperor. And he has great ambition and high energy in almost every area, whether it's military expansion, whether it's in terms of law and the development of jurisprudence and governance, whether it's the development of culture and in Constantinople, the art and architecture that he builds and forms there in Constantinople. And certainly also, I think, especially with regard to his relationship to the church, he has great ambition for the church. And I think this is what maybe is most significant about him, is just his desire to reconcile the church, the different factions of the church, and again achieve unity. And unity between the Church of Chalcedon and the Monophysite Church that had been fractured since 451 in Chalcedon. Emperor Justinian works tirelessly and even theologically to kind of find a way to heal that schism and achieve unity again.
To what degree are church and empire beginning to, what shall we say, become Siamese twins in some sense in the 6th century?
Yeah, I think this is, you know, you're certainly seeing this kind of synthesis of you know, not only just the kingdom of the left and the kingdom of the right, as we might put it, in terms of politics and religion. I mean, that kind of fusing together had maybe been true all along in the Roman Empire in some way. But certainly a synthesis now of kind of more of a Hellenistic Greco-Roman culture with Christianity is certainly something that is happening, and maybe not even, you know, it's almost like they don't think of it any other way. There is no kind of concept of secularism. And certainly Christian emperors are going to use their power, you know, to promote their belief, and certainly their belief in Christianity. And so, you know, that is a kind of maybe a troubling aspect of some of this, is the way that now, in order to achieve your goals, the emperor will certainly be willing to make use of his political power, his legal power to do it.
He's not the last gasp of the Roman Empire in a political sense, but it is experiencing some kind of decline from its previous greatness. How would you characterize this, the state of affairs in the Roman Empire at this time?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has dwindled. I mean, we have the Vandals have taken over North Africa. I mean, just the geography of the Roman Empire has dwindled in a profound way, especially. In the West, I mean the Goths and the Visigoths have invaded. So, for instance, the Mediterranean Sea, which the Roman Empire had, you know, used to be in control of all the surrounding lands, and they referred to the Mediterranean Sea as Mare Nostra, you know, our pond or our sea, in a very affectionate kind of way. I mean, that was no more. I mean, there were all kinds of different tribal invasions that have left the Roman Empire in tatters. And so it is very significant here that Justinian, in his ambition, is certainly looking to restore the ancient glory of the Roman Empire. And he, through his generals, goes on a very ambitious campaign to recover the Roman Empire as she once was, and he's very close to doing it. He does regain North Africa, regains Italy, Spain, and certainly almost all the bordering lands of the Mediterranean Sea again, and probably would have accomplished it, you know, maybe fully, if it hadn't been for the bubonic plague that takes place in the 540s that kind of ends that territorial expansion.
And in terms of the church's landscape, what does it look like? You mentioned just a moment ago a basic split between Orthodoxy and Monophysite Church. What was Monophysitism, and how does that split look at the time of Justinian?
Yeah, and it's a little bit of a kind of complicated technical issue. But yeah, I mean, since Chalcedon in 451, Chalcedon was not well received. If you remember, in the early 5th century, you had Nestorius, who basically kind of saw Christ as two persons joined together in some kind of cooperative unity. So you had a son of God and you had a son of Mary. And therefore, he kind of split the narrative. You could look at the Gospels, for instance, and read the Gospels, and you could say, well, you know, the son of God healed the leper, but it's the son of Mary or the son of man who got weak or got hungry or cried at the tomb of Lazarus or something like that. And so he tended to split them apart. And it was Cyril of Alexandria who, of course, argues against that and argues that, no, that God and man have been joined in one person. And certainly that was confessed at Chalcedon, but the problem at Chalcedon with with Leo's tome is he had kind of had emphasized the distinction between Jesus' divinity and humanity, and kind of again emphasized this distinction in the narrative that God, in some events we can see God at work, and in other events of Jesus' life we can see his humanity at work. And for many of your Orthodox Christians who are followers of Cyril, that was anathema, and they reject that, and they reject Chalcedon because of that. And that's really where the Monophysite Church comes from. They are those who always sought to be loyal to Cyril and wanted to see the union between God and man in Christ as that which is fully real, that which is complete, that which is total. And therefore, they spoke in terms of after the incarnation that God and man are united in one nature or one phusis, and that's where we get the word Monophysite. So they never accepted Chalcedon because of that. And Justinian is working very hard as one who's loyal to Chalcedon to try to reconcile the Monophysites, try to bring them back into the church. You know, and he actually is a very significant theologian. He writes a number of things that are very theological, and he has a very deep Christology that he kind of puts forward there. And you know, his main way of trying to reconcile them is he does adopt the formula of the Scythian monks, which is he the test of orthodoxy that kind of then comes out at the Fifth Ecumenical Council is that one of the Holy Trinity suffered for us. And what that formula wants to say is simply to say that the person of Jesus is identical with the second person of the Trinity. And that's where he's seeking reconciliation. You know, some Christians, especially Nestorians, had kind of spoken of almost two persons coming into a kind of blended person, so that Jesus was kind of a divine and human hybrid person. He was somewhat the Son of Mary, somewhat the Son of God. Justinian is very clear. He wants to identify in no uncertain terms that the person of Jesus is the second person of the Trinity. And in that way, he's seeking to bring the Monophysites back to the Chalcedonian faith.
He lived quite some time. Did he live to see the unification, the theological unification of the church under his attempts?
I suppose yes and no. I mean, he does, I think, make progress and certainly begins this dialogue. But I don't know, you know, it's a good question whether these controversies, you know, as you look at these controversies in the early church, whether they're ever truly solved. And, you know, there are always more questions to kind of take up, more to be answered. And certainly the Monophysite controversy will now morph into the Monothelite controversy, which will come, you know, in the next century. So he is a significant kind of marker along the road in that kind of building of the consensus and exploring, you know, how we confess Jesus and how we do that in an Orthodox way. But he's certainly not the end of this discussion. It will continue and continues to be a significant issue even to this day. I mean, obviously, even now, the Monophysite Church remains with us, and that dialogue concerning who Jesus is must continue.
Then with only a minute here, what would you say is the best thing that the Church remembers about Justinian the Great this week?
I just think it's his. I think what should be commemorated is just his great desire for the unity of the church. I mean, he is tireless in his theological work and in his desire for the church to manifest that unity that is in Jesus. And I think that is a great role model in that regard. That he's certainly interested in engaging the whole church in this conversation about Jesus and certainly longs to find unity. And I think in that way he is a true follower of Christ.
Dr. James Buescher is Assistant Professor of Historical Theology and Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Buescher, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks for having me, Don.
When we come back, it's Audio Open Lines, your chance to respond to a story on the Supreme Court case on prayer before government meetings. We'll have the story for you and your response, Audio Open Lines, on this Tuesday afternoon, November the 12th, right after this.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things, the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us, broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
For more information on the Deaconess Studies program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit ctsfw.edu or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If your travels bring you to Northwest Indiana, the Saints of Heritage Lutheran Church in Valparaiso invite you to join us for a Christ-centered, cross-focused divine service at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning. For more information about visiting Heritage, please contact Pastor Joseph Ostafinski by calling 219-464-2810 or sending an email to heritagelc@frontier.com. You can also visit us on the web at www.heritage-lcms.org.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe that traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.